Welcome back to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast to win an Academy Award for Best Theme Music. It is a new category, first year in existence, but man, did we nail it. It was really great being there, seeing everybody, seeing Timmy and Donnie and Leo.
Connie.
Connie and Danny. And Benny.
And Danny.
And Robbie.
Robbie was there.
Yo.
Mikey.
Yep.
Obviously. Big day for Mikey.
Lucy was there. And Scarlett Johansson. They were all there.
And Scarry. The other Benny.
Mm-hmm.
I got sick of the Emmys. You get sick of the Emmys pretty quickly, especially after you win a few. At some point, you just start asking yourself, like, when am I going to step up to the big leagues? So it was a pretty big day. I'm glad we won before Timothée Chalamet. That was, like, a big project for me this entire time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those Dune movies suck, dog.
Do you see they just dropped all those promo images for the new Dune? Dune 3.
Yeah.
Dune 3, baby.
Timmy was so upset. He's like, drop the trailer.
Do you think he feels embarrassed about shit-talking, like, ballet and dance now after losing out on the Oscar? Seems like he was getting pretty hot for his britches there for a little bit.
No, but I do think it's a big, legit, I do think it, for what, I have no idea why, but he seemed to be very interested in winning. The second youngest person to win a Best Actor Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I cannot comprehend why you'd care about that, but that did seem to be a big thing for him, and he, you know, I guess he's lost three times in a row now.
And he's only getting older.
Yeah, and also, like, but, you know, it's what has he done to deserve one, right? I mean, Call Me By Your Name was a big movie, but obviously the fact that Armie Hammer was in it means it can never win an award.
It's got the cannibalism taint on it now.
Yeah, and also, how dare he, like, shit-talk ballet and dancing and these other performing arts when he was in fucking the Willy Wonka prequel movie.
Well, like, not only that, shit, yeah, he's, dude, you know, he's from, like, an arts family. His mom and some of his other family, in my understanding, were, like, dancers. Like his mom was a ballet instructor. So that feels...
Oh, well, then he would know.
Yeah. Well, actually, that gives his criticism more credence.
Yeah. It's a little heavier in that case. I guess he was justified. Yeah, but, you know, whatever. Went to the right guy, Michael B. He's the GOAT. I've been watching him since he was Wallace back in the day on The Wire. Where mm-hmm. Wallace at, right?
Yep.
Dude has been good in everything. You remember Chronicle?
Yeah. How could I forget Chronicle?
The live action adaptation of Akira.
Yeah, found footage Akira.
One of people talk about guilty pleasures sometimes, and I'm not 100% convinced such a thing actually exists, but I do gotta say, I know in intellectually that Chronicle is a very bad movie. It's bad. It's a bad movie.
What's that guy's name? Josh Trank. That was him, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was Josh Trank, and was Max Landis involved? Was that the thing that they worked on together?
I think it was a Max Landis project.
So, I mean, really...
I think he wrote it.
The best thing to come out of Chronicle was Michael B. Jordan's career.
Michael B., yes. But also, you remember Dane DeHaan was in that, and I like him. He's got, like...
One of the film's crimes, is that it gave us Dane DeHaan.
No, I like Dane DeHaan. He's like one of those kids that's, like, aging in reverse. He had, like, an old man face when he was 15.
He's got Benjamin Button syndrome.
He is like a Benjamin Button. I think he's very charming in that he's looked like an old man. In that way that, you know, Billy Skarsgård, like, even when he was, like, kind of the young, handsome Billy, like, a little while back. Not that he's old and ugly now, but...
I don't think anyone described Billy Skarsgård as handsome Billy. I don't think that ever happened.
That's obviously Alex, but But either, you know, even when he was younger, he kind of had like the bulbous eye, like weird kind of like old guy thing that Stellan does not have, weirdly.
No, so Alex and Stellan look very similar to each other.
Yeah.
Little Billy's the odd one out.
Billy does not look like them. It's very strange. I don't know what happened there, but he got the big, bulgy eyes.
I mean, we don't know what their mother looks like.
Oh, you think it's some kind of genetic deformity? But Dane DeHaan has like that thing. I guess what is the polite way to say it? He carries a lot of character in his face, and I like that.
Yeah. No, he's I believe what they call unconventionally attractive.
Well, your words. also, hey, even though he was in the bad Spider-Mans, I appreciated him as Harry Osborn, you know, in light of, you know, all the allegations and whatnot.
You know, I never saw that Spider-Man. I remember bouncing off pretty hard from the first Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movie, The Amazing Spider-Man. And then they did that second one with who was in it, Dane DeHaan, and Jamie Foxx was Electro. Was that it?
Yes.
Was that movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Andrew Garfield obviously is the Spider-Man of that movie.
Yeah. Same with the newer Disney ones. I saw that first one and then was like, all right, I see what this Spider-Man is. I saw what Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man is. I get the gist. I don't need to follow along.
It's really wild when in that newest Spider-Man, shit, what is it called? No Way Home.
Mm-hmm.
When they get all of the Spider-Mans together.
And they do the Spider-Man meme.
Yeah, they do the big hype moment where you have all three Spider-Mans on screen. But like, because nobody likes Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, it like falls completely flat. It like just does not do anything at all. But you know, since we've got two Harrys and one of them happens to be James Franco, like just Dane DeHaan, he wins by default.
Well, yeah, yes. You know, something to be said about disqualifying behavior from James Franco.
Anyway, the point is, Chronicle is, you remember Chronicle? Remember Chronicle?
Yeah.
I like that movie quite a lot, even though by all accounts, I should not like that movie at all. Again, honestly, being as honest as I possibly can be, one of the best live action anime adaptations. Not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying that's true.
You know, that's the kind of, fodder we're dealing with here. Now, on to the topic of adaptations. I've also watched something recently.
Oh, something got adapted?
Yeah, something that's been adapted, or
wow.
Maybe we should say loosely inspired. They are doing a live action. Maybe you've heard about this. I don't know if anyone's heard about this yet. Anyone heard about this live action One Piece?
Oh yeah, that's right. That exists.
Yeah.
The
Spark Notes edition of One Piece, basically.
My God. Yes, we did a whole episode about
we
that.
Did.
I totally
we did.
Forgot.
Oh, duh. Of course, on
Damn,
this show that we do.
One Piece. Yeah, you know what was bummer on the Oscars was hearing everybody thanking Netflix over and over again. Wow. Damn, that sucked.
With every acknowledgement to Netflix during the Oscars, you could feel the budget for season three of One Piece growing ever steadily. Season two of the live action One Piece adaptation just came out, I think, either last week or maybe just a couple days ago, depending on depending on the date that we're recording this. And so
I totally forgot that was happening.
Yeah.
That is not a joke. I completely fucking forgot about
it. It flew under my radar and I was literally in Japan when they were doing the big, like, you know, pre-release marketing push for it. It totally phased me by. And in fact, I was telling you earlier when I went to Don Quixote's and was like looking around their merch section like for the anime stuff, they had an entire bin of like 60 to 70% marked off One Piece live action merch that they just could not move at all. Just like racks of it.
Do you think that's because of the rising ultranationalism?
It could be part of it.
You think that might be part of it?
I think that may be a component of it, but you know, it kind of goes in the face of something that we talked about on the last episode for season one of One Piece live action, is that Oda is very involved in the production of this show, to my understanding. And I just find it weird that he is so all in on this like adaptation. Like, he's going to meetings, he's approving scripts, according to him. And, you know, everything that goes on the screen is getting his sign off. And yet it is not taking hold in Japan at all. Where, like, you know, you called One Piece basically the biggest piece of, like, cross-cultural media in existence right now. And it seems like this multi-million dollar adaptation is just not taking root in where it should be the most popular.
Maybe because they're spoiled. They're spoiled for live action One Piece already. I mean, they've been doing these stage shows forever, right?
That's true. They have. Man, I would have. Yeah. I would have loved to go to a live action like One Piece stage show while I was there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the only thing that was playing was the live action Tokyo Ghoul stage show.
You should have gone to that too.
I have no background with Tokyo Ghoul. I wouldn't know what I was seeing.
I don't know. That might have improved it, honestly.
But season two of live action One Piece just came out. I've seen the first three episodes so far. You have not watched any of it yet, right?
None of it. Yeah. I have seen the screenshots of Chopper, and that was a while ago. Like I said, I forgot this was coming out, but I saw the screenshots of Chopper, and you know, that really scared me off. That really made me feel some things I didn't want to be feeling.
Mercifully, I've not gotten to Chopper introduction yet in the live action.
Oh man. Oh boy.
You know, the pacing. I know a little bit about the One Piece timeline, and I've read just like basically nothing of One Piece. I've read up through Arlong Park. I read it when we talked about the season one episode, because Arlong Park was the big arc for that season.
Yes.
And I never really picked it up back after that, when, you know, I understand that where I stopped is really in an area where One Piece is still trying to find its identity and like its formula, which later kind of gets solidified, you said, in like the Alabasta arc, right?
Yeah, I said, you know, the weird thing about this season is we're two in, and according to you, they do not get to Alabasta in this season based on episode descriptions.
That's what I was trying to get at, is that the pacing is real weird.
It's very strange.
We're getting a very much a Two Towers situation. Not those Two Towers, the other ones, the fun ones with hobbits and elves.
Not 2001, 2003. I think, right?
Yeah, no, I think so. I've watched the first three episodes, and what we've covered so far is kind of like, by the end of episode two, we've gotten to the grand line. The first two episodes are setting up essentially what's going to be the theme for this season, which is doing the early island hopping stuff. And so we start off in Logue Town, and we introduce Captain Smoker and the Navy guys. Which is like, you know, I know that they say sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, but he's got two cigars in his mouth all the time. I'm just saying.
He does.
Just saying.
Well,
you know.
His power is smoking, so, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Is he endorsed by Philip Morris?
He might as well be.
Yeah.
Does he use his powers on screen?
Yeah.
He must.
Oh yeah,
right?
He does them. Okay. They give him a big showpiece fight.
Then you know why.
Yeah. And we introduce. I'm already forgetting. What's the assassin group called?
Baroque Works.
Yes, Baroque
Is that
Works.
What you're thinking of?
That's what I'm thinking
yeah.
of. They introduce Baroque Works, and the we get our first look at Nico Robin and some of the other like recurring characters that they set up. Miss Wednesday and Mr. Nine is kind of like our joke relief characters so far this season, kind of the way Buggy was in the first one, where it's like they set him up as villains and then they kind of do this Team Rocket routine as we go along, where it's like they're just kind of there in the background, generally like setting context for the Baroque Works storyline, but also kind of doing like pratfalls and stuff because
they're not supposed to be menacing.
No. Well, he wears a crown and has like a little Dutch boy prince haircut.
Yeah.
I could not feel threatened by this man if he tried.
Yeah. In fact, you're supposed to kind of feel affectionate towards them.
That's part of the whole Team Rocket routine. You know, they're lovable dirt bags. Or something along those lines. Anyway.
You will come to regret these words and deeds. That's all I'm going to say.
That's the first episode, is kind of resetting the tone for what the season's going to be like. Second episode is them getting over the red line and doing the Laboon whale kind of mini arc.
Yep.
And then... where I left off at the end of the third episode, they've made it to the Grand Line and they've made it to the first of the islands, which is in this one, I think maybe they're skipping around a bit or kind of truncating some stuff. But in this one, the first island they go to is the Cactus Island, which is, kind of like a at first seems like a pirate haven, kind of like a mini Vegas situation. And then it turns out the entire island is run by Baroque Works as a honeypot trap to lure in pirates and then, red wedding their asses when they get too comfortable. So that's where we are. And then judging by just the episode descriptions in Netflix, it's still going to be a couple more episodes before we get to the Snow Island and the introduction of Chopper. And that seems to be Chopper's story, and him joining the crew seems to be like the season, what it's building towards. That's like the season finale arc. So I don't know. You're more familiar with the actual One Piece timeline, but I can only assume that they are cutting out a bunch of stuff in between, where I am and where this is ends. And then also, yeah, what we were saying earlier is that seems like a weird like shortstop area to end the season on if what they're trying to build to is the greater Alabasta arc, which is the big one that kind of sets up what One Piece is gonna be.
I mean the whole thing is very strange, obviously, because like One Piece is so sprawling that it's basically impossible to recreate what they did, or not impossible, but they would have to do some serious cutting and navigating to recreate what they did in season one, which is essentially pretty smart because they built the entire thing around the confrontation at Arlong Park, which gives us Nami's storyline as the season storyline, right?
Yeah, yes.
Which is good because Nami's story is really compelling. Now, what they could do is recreate that with a certain other character in this time, but the amount of stuff that they would have to like cut or rearrange would be incredibly massive. From what you told me already, they skip over the two giants.
Yes. Yeah, that was not
the two
present.
Giants do not appear, which is again, kind of a signifier of like, well, they're not going to continue running this show forever, because these two giants are important way down the line, a very, very long time from now. So going like, yeah, we're going to skip those, totally makes sense to me. Fuck them. Big giants. It's a stop off. You do meet some of the Brokework agents on the Giants Island. So clearly they've already moved those around. Or maybe they didn't. Maybe you just don't meet them because there are a whole pack of them. And it sounds like you only met the two, right?
We haven't met any giants. Or you're talking about
Brokework members.
They've introduced several. You know, at the beginning of the first episode, they introduce, like, we get a cold open on Shelltown, and it's being ransacked by a bunch, like, I think three or four Baroque Works agents.
Okay.
Or I think it's two of them. One of them looks kind of like a 60s go-go dress, kind of like lady. She's yep. got an umbrella. And then the yeah. other one was, I can't remember what his deal was. But
the wax guy?
Yeah, yes. And they yeah. were talking, who now I'm thinking they were talking about two other agents, and I'm pretty sure that they were referencing Nico Robin and somebody else that we haven't been introduced yet. And then later on, they introduce us to Miss Wednesday and... Mr. Nine.
Yes.
And so those are all of the Baroque Works agents that we've seen so far. Oh, and no, right. the guy who's the mayor of Cactus Town.
Mayor of Cactus Town, baby.
Yep.
Now, is it called Cactus Town? Because no, I thought it was Whiskey Island or
no,
something.
No, Whiskey Peak is what they call it.
Whiskey Peak, yes. Yeah. Whiskey Town.
Yep.
I mean, this is important, and it's hard to, like, actually gauge what's important in One Piece, because all this stuff, at some point, all of it comes back around. Like, Oda is the king of recycling, so it is difficult to cut anything in One Piece, even though eventually you do need to cut stuff. Like, they can't do the anime thing where, like, they just run for 50 seasons. It's just not going to happen. It's a Netflix show.
Right.
Cost $12 million per episode.
Yeah.
They're releasing these in what, like eight at a time?
Yep. And it's actually $18 million per episode.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So we've cut out one island to make room for Tony's arc, essentially,
mm-hmm.
which is the only thing standing between them and Alabasta, which is, like I've mentioned before, like, one of the most important things that happens in early One Piece, because it establishes what the formula is going to be moving forward. Alabasta arc is like the blueprint for the next, I don't know, 30 fucking years of One Piece. And it's chunky. You know, for example, this beginning Baroque Works and Chopper Island setup. In the manga, that's maybe 10 chapters.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Alabasta is like 40 chapters.
Okay. So...
yeah.
See, again, this is what is making the whole pacing of this so weird. Because it... okay. In my mind, it feels like what they're doing... because they don't have like a... this isn't like an HBO prestige show where you have like a showrunner who's like... the face of the show, and he's...
yeah, let's say a David Simon.
Yeah, exactly. And so...
you don't have a Michael B. in the show to really bring the whole cast up.
There's no... there's no Dick Wolf behind the scenes here.
Chunk, chunk.
And so, like, you don't... they don't... they haven't televised what their vision for Netflix One Piece is. Whether it's something that has an ending in mind, or if it's just, well, we're just going to keep making it as long as they keep telling us to, which may ultimately seems like it might be the case. I'd like to think that they have some kind of of end goal that they can at least structure around, even if there's the possibility of going beyond that. Like, in my mind, it seems like, all right, we're going to do three seasons, and end of third season is going to be the conclusion of the Alabasta arc. And then that is going to be, like, our entry into One Piece. Like, that's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to adapt all of One Piece. We're just going to do this chunk, because that is the onboarding. And if people like this, that means that they're going to be more likely to engage with One Piece in other areas, just strictly from like a marketing perspective, like, you know, from why Netflix would want to do it this way. That just makes sense to me. But again, I don't have the bug of mindless like consumer growth in my head, so maybe there is no plan, and there's no plan.
Oh, I'm saying I'm making the Polymarket page right now for do you think One Piece will end or not? Because all my money is on not. This is a peter out situation.
Okay. All right.
What you are describing, I mean, the only way that you could off ramp at all is reach a what is considered like a fan favorite, iconic conclusion, and the closest one that I can think of. So we go, light spoilers, I guess, if you care about that. But we go from Chopper's Island to Alabasta. We go from Alabasta, and again, there's some like light stuff, but we go from there to Sky Island. That's the next big one. From Sky Island, we end up at Water 7. Water 7 is a big naval prison, basically, or naval outpost. And there is a extraordinarily iconic One Piece moment involving Nico Robin here in Water 7, which, you know, if you were going to like bow out, you might want to hit that one and then fuck off.
That's the one to hit.
If I was doing this, I would probably try to hold out at least till then. But you do have to like burn through a lot of stuff. Again, that would be post Alabasta, post Skypiea, all the way through three arcs, basically, to the end of this part where the Nico Robin iconic moment happens. So, and from what you're describing, I mean, that's like six seasons. I mean, that is this thing gonna hit six seasons? I don't think so. Doesn't look like it. When's the last time a Netflix show went for six seasons?
Oh gosh, The Great British Bake Off.
Okay, so the cheapest possible thing they could make.
Yeah, basically. That's great. I mean, that is the number one deciding factor on how many seasons you get is how cheap is it. How cheap can we make this? That determines the length. So that, I think, generally kind of sums up my big criticism overall of doing a One Piece live action adaptation is like, what is the point? Because you know it can only just stop, basically. It's never going to reach the end of One Piece. It can only ever just peter out, like you said. Whether that's like four or five or even six seasons in, it's never going to be an adaptation of One Piece. It is at best going to be an adaptation of like one section of One Piece that we can kind of say is like one thing, right? Like you were saying. So it feels, and for spending $18 million per episode, it just feels so much like I'm having fun. I don't want to come off on the wrong foot here. I think that generally I am having fun watching these episodes, whether it's because like I think that it's like just generally well made in some areas, or if it's just so weird and goofy that I can't help but be charmed by it. Like, I am enjoying it, but for how much money they're pouring into these episodes, it's like they're treading water a little bit. And despite that, I am having fun watching these. I think that I'm generally enjoying them for a variety of reasons. I'm not going to say that they are, like, technically good. Like, I don't think that it's, like, good. It's
not. You don't want to commit to that.
It's not. It's no, like, it's no Game of Thrones season one, but it's definitely like a Game of Thrones season five or six. I'll give it that.
Damn, that far in?
Yeah.
Not even a Game of Thrones season four?
No. We haven't worked up to a season four yet.
Okay, all right. So the thing I was mentioning before was, and not season two specific, so this is good, but that I had seen somebody posting about the main dude's performance as Luffy, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wish I remembered his name. Sorry for the disrespect.
Sorry, guy. You're just Luffy now.
Sorry, guy. You're going to be Luffy for the rest of your life if this all works out. But I saw somebody talking about his performance and saying, you know, he's a great choice because he really, really nails Luffy's goofiness, his boisterous attitude, you know, his love for partying, his kind of aloofness, his joyous aloofness. But when Luffy gets intense, which does not happen all the time, but does happen, for example, in the last season when we're on our way to Arlong Park and he gives Nami his hat, right? This is like his, I'm going into fucking Super Saiyan mode. I am going to destroy people. And they were saying it's difficult to see him as the angry, intense, serious, violent Luffy, which, you know, he is. He is also that in the manga. And I think I agree that,
yeah,
my dude doesn't, he does not really have the edge, the dangerous part.
So that's
at least in season one.
That's one of the things that stood out to me the most so far in season two. And it was definitely present in season one as well. Basically, it's exactly like that commenter was saying. In the fun scenes where we get to see laid back, goofy, kind of like casual Luffy, where he comes through as a very like kind, genuine hearted person, you know, who has a lot of ideals. Yeah, simple ones.
Yeah,
but
absolute homie.
Yeah, you know, I think that's absolutely correct. He's very good at portraying that side of Luffy. It's whenever there's supposed to be a serious moment, or the low points of Iñaki Godoy's, that's his name, by the way, I remember.
Oh good.
Yeah.
Sorry, Iñaki.
The low point of his performance as Luffy is when he's trying to be, I would say, angry or like, you know, fired up, I guess, in a fight. You know, you have these several kind of like, let's get down to business, you know, throwing off the kid gloves moments where he gets angry. And that is harder to pull off because, and this is something that I was trying to explain when we were talking before we started recording, and this isn't a problem that is specific for me to One Piece live action. It is just kind of an issue with live action adaptation of anime in general, is that there is a certain level of like melodrama that is completely like, I am completely able to buy into it on the page because there is a level of disconnect between between reality and like what, you know, what Oda has drawn or what the author has drawn. And I'm like, okay, it works in a comic format is what I'm saying. And when you do it in live action, when you try and recreate those like epic page turn panels with the, you know, when you know, the Super Saiyan or Luffy giving away his hat, when you try and do that on the page, it comes off goofy as all hell. And that is definitely an issue, not only with Luffy in this season, but pretty much with all of the Straw Hat crew members, especially Zoro. For all of Inyaki's, like, you know, issues with portraying that, like, a serious side of Luffy, the guy that they have playing Zoro cannot help. And I don't know if this is, like, intentional, like if they're doing this on purpose as a joke, but every line read comes off as him trying to read it as like a cool anti-hero, you know, one-liner line drop every single line. You know, he always says it with a low voice, like he's taking it really seriously.
Yeah I mean, that kind of is his gag. I said from the beginning, though, I think the problem with that casting is that he basically looks as young as the rest of the cast.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly how old present-day Zoro is supposed to be at that time in the storyline.
Zoro has a gag that comes up a lot where when he tells people that he's basically the same age as everyone, they don't believe him because he's supposed to be like an old grizzled samurai, right? Uh-huh. Like that is the whole thing. And they should have cast somebody who is like a grizzled samurai. And then the joke would have worked.
I'm only 30 years old.
Yes, exactly.
Alcohol has ruined my life.
Yeah. And then when he says like, no, I'm 18, and everybody would be like, what the fuck? No, you're not that good. Then you could do the gag, but they skipped that and they tried to make him too young, I think, because like an older man, an older grizzled actor doing the old grizzled samurai thing could give you those line reads, right?
Yeah.
Somebody who genuinely feels like they can be world weary in the way that like you could actually deliver those lines would also fit the gag of the guy being like, no, I'm just as old as the rest of you. I'm not an old guy.
Which yeah, no, absolutely.
In the manga, they should have gone for that, but they chickened out.
They did not do that. He is like the smoothest face pretty boy that you could possibly imagine. I mean, honestly, there are certain scenes where he looks younger than some of the other cast members.
Yeah, he looks too young.
Yeah, he looks much too young.
Yeah, but for your other criticism, I do want to say I don't think this is a problem that is insurmountable for live action. I think there are three things. One, they do this kind of shit all the time in soap operas, and it works. Two, they do this shit all the time in wrestling, and it fucking works. And three, Takashi Miike has done this a million times in his adaptations, and it works. It fucking works. He knows how to do this shit.
That's what they need, is someone who really knows what they're fucking doing, because it's got to be... I mean, I understand that there are situations where it works. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist. I'm saying that it's incredibly hard to pull off. And, you know, I think that also probably the fact that this is in English changes the line reads of some of these moments a little bit. I'm not exactly sure how to explain it. But, like, you know, my example is it looks goofy as fuck to have Inyaki Godoy live action do the whole wind up rubber arm thing and shout out his moves when he's like punching people. What I don't know what they could do to make that read better on the page, because it is incredibly like breaking my buy-in, you know. It is breaking my immersion.
Yes.
of how seriously I need to take this thing.
Yeah,
because they're saying that this is a serious moment, like he's not doing the goofy like fun-loving Luffy thing anymore, he's like trying to be serious, and then he shouts out Gum Gum Rocket and you're like, oh wait, this is like, what are we doing here? what's going on?
And again, I would say, look at the way that wrestlers perform their iconic moves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people fucking love that shit. It works.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's, you can shorthand it. You know, when you do the big, like, windmill wind-up thing with his arm, that's a visual call-out. You don't need to yell out the name of the move after that. You can do one or the other, and I would say do the visual thing.
Yeah, I do agree. I don't really need them to yell out the thing. That's fine for me if you leave that out.
Yeah.
I think when in the JoJo live-action movie that Takashi Miike did, when Jotaro does Ora Ora Ora, that fucking rocks and it's good.
Oh yeah, that's great.
like they did not hey, have to
still
change wait, anything.
Still
and it
waiting
works.
on Diamond is Unbreakable Part 2 from Miike. Still waiting on
God,
that one.
I would kill to have that shit. If he would stop whatever stupid shit he's working on right now and go back and do that. I think he's, you know what I last heard was he was doing, after the night of the Nyat of the Living Cat, he started doing something like a horror movie with Charlie XCX.
What?
Which is so weird to me.
What? Yeah. Okay.
Some kind of horror project with Charlie XCX. So Takashi Miike cross Charlie XCX coming soon. But I would not mind at all if he scrapped that and immediately went back to JoJo.
Yeah.
Because goddamn, that shit fucking rocked. Oh my God, it's so good. He really did it. And his Blade of the Immortal is fucking great. It's like, oh, fuck, dude. Oh my God.
So what you're saying is that we need to get Miike to do the adaptation of One Piece.
He fucking did Night of the Living Cat. What? Why? How busy could he possibly be? I mean, this is the dude that has made the most successful anime adaptations, right?
Well, he's definitely made the most of them.
He's made Ichi the Killer, which is a smash hit. I mean, genuinely, like, most people don't even fucking know that that was a manga.
I mean, that's kind of the... That's not just a big adaptation. That's a big name in his personal catalog. That's kind of like one of the things that most people know him from.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And like he smashed it out of the park. You know, he's done like the As the Gods Will movie, which obviously I very much like quite a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's done Zebra Man.
Did he do the Battle Royale adaptation from like the early 2000s? Was that him?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
The point being, sure, no one is Takashi Miike. Nobody else out here is Takashi Miike. But you can look at the ways that guys have done this shit, and you can just do that.
Yeah.
Hate to backseat drive here, but...
I mean, there's no shortage of reference of better adaptations that you can just pull from.
Yeah.
Especially when you're spending $18 million per episode.
Yeah, like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
I bet Takashi Miike would do an episode if you gave him $18 million. If you just called him up and were like, hey, in between movies, do you just want to direct an episode? He would probably say yes.
Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, fuck it.
I mean, did they try? Let me know if you worked on the show. Let me know if you guys ever reached out.
Yeah, we reached out to him, but, you know, he said that he had, like, swimming practice that day. And then, you know, he was doing something else across town, so he didn't really have time for it. That's what he told me anyway.
Oh man, you caught me at a really bad time. This is the first time in career that I'm turning something down. I just, you know, in general, I said I got to do that more in my life. So I'm just, for the first time ever, no, I won't be doing that.
So yeah, that's One Piece season 2 so far. I'm enjoying it. I think that I'm definitely gonna finish the season just because I want to see what they do with Tony Chopper and that horrible CG abomination that we saw in the trailer from mid last year at some point.
I can't deal with that.
There was one last thing that I thought was weird about this. In the first episode, you know, they do the arc where they're setting up the Baroque Works people and they go to some Navy base town to do shopping. You know, Zoro has to get some more swords. And
naturally,
Nami wants to go do shopping. So they all kind of split up and do their separate stuff. And for whatever reason, the sword shop owner stuck out to me as a weird character choice because visually they're doing like this, you know, he looks like the character from the manga, from when I looked it up, and he's kind of got like this old man swordsmith vibe kind of to him, right?
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, the actor is doing he's doing some kind of like Billy Crystal in The Princess Bride, kind of like vaguely Yiddish, like shopkeeper routine.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, well, they're doing the whole joke about, you know, how Zorro doesn't know how to haggle. And it's like he feels like he's getting ripped off because the guy wants to buy his fancy sword from him. And he's like, here, I'll give you all these cheap swords if you let me have that one. It's not worth anything anyway. And while he's doing it, he's like doing this like old Jewish shopkeeper routine.
That's really weird.
Yeah,
that's weird.
Okay, I just wanted to confirm that that's weird. That's not me being weird. That that's like a weird decision for them to make, right?
It's pretty weird.
Okay, all right. I feel
pretty weird.
I feel better about that one now. It's not just me.
I mean, I haven't seen it.
Well, you know, so maybe, I don't know, maybe see it and get back to me on that one. Let me know what you think. It stuck out to me as a bit out of left field. So I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll go watch that and let you know what the fuck is going on.
Okay.
It's been a while since I read those chapters.
Sure.
But that's not really how I remember.
That's not how it stuck out to you.
Not
at the
really,
time.
No.
Okay, all right.
Guess I'll have to update my early One Piece knowledge.
But yeah, that's One Piece Season 2 so far. I would say, yeah, go check it out. I'm having a good time.
That's okay. That's where we're going to land on
it. Yeah, that's where we're going to land on it. Check it out. Have a beer. Have some snacks, make some nachos. Yeah,
watch
have a grand old time.
Episodes.
Yeah, for what's the first
It'll
three episodes? It's fine.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Watch for the Easter eggs.
All right.
They love Easter eggs.
They love those Easter eggs. Actually, we didn't even get into the fact that they introduced Dragon in like the second episode.
Oh yeah. Well, that's just weird shit. Shuffling stuff around.
They're doing some big shuffling. Anyway,
they're just doing weird shuffling stuff.
We're in danger of going overtime on One Piece Season 2 action.
Okay.
So yes. let me switch gears for a little bit. Last episode, I did mention that I read some manga on the plane ride back from Japan that I wanted to talk a little bit about. I read, if you couldn't have guessed it, I read some trashy Gyaru manga. I know, out of character for me.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Naturally, of course. Yep. Of course you did.
I read most of so far, because there's only like 50 chapters out, of a manga called Now That We Draw, which stuck out to me because it is one entry in a wider trend that we've both noticed since the popularity of Dangers in My Heart, of tall girl, short little emo guy rom-com.
A classic. What a classic.
A budding classic. It's taking root in the culture right now. And this is very much in that category. This is what drew me to it. I mean, initially was that like, oh, that looks kind of like Dangers in My Heart. Let's see what's going on.
I'm looking at the promo trailer, the promo art here, and I know what drew you to it. It's very clear, very clear.
Hey,
why don't you look?
I have no control what images they use for the promos. Okay.
Listen. Okay. Drop the extremely concise summary, and then let's go ahead and watch the. the anime trailer together here for the show that's coming out soon.
All right. So it is your standard tall, outgoing girl, small, introverted guy rom-com setup, except in this one, they are both very motivated to become mangaka as their careers. They're little art nerds, not just anime nerds, like they're legitimately art nerds, and they both want to become comic book artists. And the premise is they are both interested in writing shoujo manga specifically, which is one of the things that I found interesting about the main character. Is that, like, he specifically wants to be a shoujo artist. I thought that was kind of neat. And they kind of enter into this relationship because neither of them have experience with the opposite sex. And so that's, you know...
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Man.
That's the basic premise. That and that also the initial hook is that she is the female protagonist is way better at art than the male protagonist, which I also thought was a fun angle.
Okay, let's watch this. Let's really quickly watch this promo trailer here.
I'm already dreading it.
Let's see what this show's all about.
All right, I'm starting it.
Like, like, do they address that she is, what, like an introverted Gyaru? Is that like a thing they talk about?
No, because she's not really. She is the extroverted character by far. I think the disconnect is supposed to be that she is a, you know, like preppy extroverted Gyaru that is into drawing manga as like her secret hobby.
Well, she's not preppy because she's sloppy as hell in this trailer. I mean, she can't even get her sweater on and her tie is like all over the place.
No, that's all intentional slop. Like, get with the times, yeah, but dude.
You can't be preppy if your sweater's not on. Okay, so like it's a 1 minute long and there's about 15 different like massive titty boob jiggle clips. It seems to be there are two shots in 1 minute of manga, and there is at least five titty shots.
Okay, listen, I'm not saying that it doesn't have its issues.
It's insane.
Listen, let those without sin cast the first stone, okay? Huh?
Isn't it like illegal to have this much cleavage in Japanese high schools anyway?
Oh,
isn't
by
that
far.
Like a thing? Don't they put you in prison for that or something?
Well, you know, to be fair, they do go out of their way to say that this is a public school.
Ah, so it's for trash people.
Yep. It's for those goddamn trash kids.
Society has given up on. Yeah, this is, yeah, wow. So this is going to be pretty popular.
Oh, yeah, I can already, this is going to be the next big thing. Absolutely.
You know, the one striking thing from this 1 minute of footage, I have to say, is the mix of occasionally pretty well done animation, and then like the laziest phoned in animation. They kind of have just like blended them together.
Oh,
it's
man.
Very odd.
That's just all anime right now. That's not just this. That's just how things are. I have no idea how they decide which segments like of the anime to devote resources to, because quality is wildly inconsistent across the board right now, unless you're being produced by like MAPPA or 4C or like Kyoto Animation. Like, unless you have an actual like monolithic name production house behind your show, It's just you're doing bursts, like 15-second bursts of actually well-animated, good-looking anime, and then just slideshow shit in between all of that. It's every series I'm seeing right now.
Well, you know, I did read a story recently. This seems like the perfect example, because an anime CEO came out and publicly made comments about the average pricing of anime episodes and anime movies. According to him, we've basically averaged out, and this is a good comparison to the Netflix thing, at like $1 million. $1 million to $2 million per episode of an anime, and $25 million per movie. As an example, like, you know, an hour and a half, kind of like Demon Slayer level movie. That's their
$25 million.
$25 million.
Okay, now maybe my gauge is off. That seems like criminally low, like. Like, you can't actually make a movie that looks like Demon Slayer or Chainsaw Man or Look Back for less than $25 million or around $25 million without, like, physically, like, hurting your staff. Like actually physically making them bleed in some areas. To me, it feels like it should cost at least three times that big to make a movie that good looking. But again, I'm completely all fucked up because I'm still baffled that the episodes of One Piece cost $18 million each to make.
Yeah, see, your assumptions about this stuff has become insanely skewed by like companies like Netflix just going batshit insane and throwing $10 million at one episode of one television show.
Yeah.
This CEO is claiming, you know, these things are becoming, this kind of stuff is insane, and it is completely stratifying animation houses to the point where basically the only possible way to continue working is achieving high power IP based on like a game, you know, or something like that. And something that is like internationally recognized. Everybody else is getting shrunk down to like weekend, according to him, what he calls weekend or morning anime, which is all the kind of like what we've called slideshow anime.
Yeah.
And the split between those two things is like getting bigger and bigger every day. And the quality of the slideshow anime is getting worse. And the pricing of the good anime is ballooning like crazy, to the point where they're losing more and more studios to the slideshow style. And if you can't produce something that looks like Jujutsu Kaisen or Chainsaw Man, you are going to end up doing these shovelware slideshow.
Now, it's interesting that you point that out, because that... those comments also come on the heels of the fact that between 2020 and 2026, you know, right now, more anime has been produced year after year than each previous year. Like, yeah. Production has not slowed down. It has only increased despite the lowering... despite lowering sales output, lowering demand, and lowering quality. It's almost like anime is some kind of like sphere-shaped like industry that maybe has some kind of risk of catastrophic collapse if it keeps going at the rate it is. I don't know if there's a term for that. Do we call that something? Some kind of big round thing that maybe just kind of goes away if you poke it in the wrong spot. I don't know. This is a brand new thing.
We can call it the Gantz effect.
Yeah. Yes.
Because you play until you die.
Yep. Exactly. You either live long enough to become a production house member, or you die a lowly cell animator.
Yeah. You know, and part of the thing that sparked this CEO talk and the article is talking about how people like Crunchyroll and Netflix have begun being stingier and more critical of the stuff that's being pitched to them because of the massive expansion of like potential IP. Mm-hmm. They have such a higher selection that such a larger and broader selection that they can be pickier and they can start lowballing these companies, you know, which is a knock-on effect of like ballooning the industry, right?
Yeah.
And now people like Kadokawa are saying, oh geez, I don't know, something is gotta give, because this rate of growth is not sustainable if people keep pulling money back out of the industry. And it's looking pretty bad. And so like the production of something like this, right, is like weird, like middle space now that we draw thing.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing I feel like that is going to start disappearing. But it also explains why they're shooting for like 15 different audiences, right? That's like, this is why massive titty jiggle shit is being inserted into this stuff, because like there is a wide audience that does not give a shit about some little kid high school romance, but will watch because of titty jiggle. And if they don't capture like both of those audiences, these people are like gonna be homeless.
Just to be clear, I'm here specifically for awkward high school romances.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm not one of the titty jiggle guys. I want to be very upfront about that, in case, you know, certain allegations start going around online. That's not me. That is incidental to what I'm interested in this manga.
Uh-huh, sure. Yeah, I mean, it's front and center of this trailer, even more than the manga they're drawing. But yeah, definitely. It's mostly about the artistry of creating manga.
Yeah. Really is, you know? Uh-huh.
Yeah, like how Son Obisky Doll is about the art of cosplay.
You're never going to let me live that one down, are you?
No, that's not happening.
Okay, all right. Well,
I haven't even read this one, but I did read Son Obisky Doll, and I am not letting that go. I've seen it. I have seen it.
Well, I refuse to stop embracing my horrible trash chase, and you're almost guaranteed to hear more about similar titles to this one in the future. That is a anime death spiral guarantee.
Oh my god. I mean, shit, if this is all that's gonna be, I mean, I know I've complained a billion times about how like they just like, I guess it's just economically not feasible to make anime without titty jiggle as like a central selling point, but like, man, this is not reflecting well on the art the artistry of the medium.
It's bleak
at large.
Yeah, it's bleak.
This is not good, people. It's great that they describe the big titty heroine in this manga as bashful, airheaded, and completely chaste. It's good. I'm glad we got that in. It's cool, man. Cool. Manga's cool. Anime's cool. All of this stuff is good for some reason. And I just want to say as the final thing, I like slop like everyone else. It's fine. But it's sometimes you want something that's not slop. That's all I'm saying. That sometimes you want to sort through,
hey, you know,
sift through the garbage and find a diamond every once in a while.
And I totally agree. You know, I just happen to be much more tolerant of the slop for longer periods than you are, you know? Have you tried lowering your standards? You might be happier.
I feel like my standards are already pretty low. I mean, I've talked a lot about all the shit that I've read.
Oh, buddy, they can go so much lower. Trust me.
Oh, man.
You wouldn't believe the things that I've seen.
Okay, next episode, I'm going to list all the trash I'm reading. We're going to go trash for trash.
Okay, we want to go trash for trash? I'm into that. I can do that.
Let's do that. Let's do that. Because I did say we were going to watch the new All You Need Is Kill, but then I realized it's not out in America until mid-April anyway.
Another reason to hate America.
So I fucked that one up. Yeah, so we got a little time to wait. We'll sit on that. We'll go trash for trash next episode.
All right. Okay. Well, until then, go do the stuff, like, subscribe, hit the buttons. We'll be back next week talking about trash yet again. Seriously, go check out Live Action One Piece. I think that it's actually a fun, weird show. Does not justify the $18 million per episode price tag, but you know what? Who am I to complain? Until next time, bye.
I get it. I just don't like it in any way, and I think it's bad.